love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Good. Welcome to the Calcio Corner podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the fifth episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, and on Stitcher. You can follow my personal Twitter account. It is at Italiano Calcio. You can also follow the Twitter account for this podcast. It is at the Calcio Corner. So some quick news. I've launched a Patreon site. And if you would like to help support my work with this podcast, it'd be greatly appreciated. There's currently only one tier available. It is the Tifo tier, and it costs just $2 per month. There will be another tier in the near future. But as a patron of the Calcio Corner, you will get some cool perks, which include a shout-out on my podcast, access to talk Calcio with me anytime you want on Discord using their messaging feature, as well as access to one patron-exclusive podcast per month. So again, please consider becoming a patron to support my work with this podcast. The link is in my Twitter bio, and it is greatly appreciated. So we will start off this fifth episode of the podcast by talking about the Champions League game between Atalanta and PSG. Unfortunately, it ended up being heartbreak for Atalanta despite their amazing efforts. Atalanta avoided falling behind early when Neymar missed a golden chance to score. And when I see that image in my head of him missing that goal, it still surprises me that he did miss it. Fortunately for Atalanta, they rebounded strong after that. And then it was in the 26th minute that Mario Pasalic scored a gem of a goal to give Atalanta the lead. Keep in mind, Pasalic started this game because Ilicic was injured. So good job by Super Mario making the most of this opportunity to start. Atalanta played well throughout, although late in that second half, I think they got a little bit too defensive-minded. But they did maintain the lead literally until the 90th minute, and it was former Roma man Marquinhos who equalized for PSG, and then just moments later, PSG doubled their lead, and the heartbreak for Atalanta was completed. I was legitimately sick to my stomach and felt horrible for Atalanta after this one. I think the last time I had that feeling in my stomach was when Italy failed to qualify for the 2018 World Cup. You know, it's one thing to concede goals earlier in the games. Had they lost this game 2-1 and conceded goals in the 50th and 60th minute, it wouldn't have been as gut-wrenching. But to literally have everything fall apart in the 90th minute when you're just, you know, 5 minutes away from winning and reaching the semifinals, it's just absolutely gut-wrenching way to lose. But regardless of this, Atalanta have no reasons to feel bad. They certainly should hold their heads up high. Not only did they have a great season domestically again in Serie A, but they shocked the world by even making it out of their group in the Champions League and making this amazing run to the quarterfinals, and again, just being 5 minutes away from reaching the semifinals. Atalanta are back in the Champions League next season, and there's no chance that any team will be taking them lightly this time around. Something that did surprise me is I saw on Twitter that there was, you know, a number of Serie A fans that were pretty happy that Atalanta lost this game, and I'm not sure why. Personally, I like to see Serie A clubs being successful in Europe. I think it's good for Serie A as a whole. It's good for Italy. I mean, don't you want to see Italian teams being successful and dominating in Europe? It's only going to help the league, as I said. Plus, Atalanta is such a feel-good story that no matter what Serie A club you support, doesn't their story kind of resonate with you, and didn't you want to see them succeed? And you consider all that's happened with COVID-19 and how hard hit the city of Bergamo was and how it was, you know, the first major European city that was impacted by COVID-19 and how those citizens in that city have rallied behind this Atalanta team, how this Atalanta team has rallied behind the citizens of that city. It was just such a good feel-good story that it took me by surprise that not only were there Serie A fans rooting against Atalanta, but that they kind of openly mocked them on Twitter and whatnot. Look, if this was Juventus who had got knocked out and lost in this fashion, or Inter, I could kind of understand there being Serie A fans of other clubs being happy, because, you know, we're talking about two of the more polarizing teams in Italy, two teams that have such strong fan bases that root against them. But, I mean, this was Atalanta. Again, it was such a good feel-good story. Sure, Atalanta have rival teams in Italy, you know, Brescia being one of them because of their nearby proximity. But does any rival club that you support of Atalanta really have that strong of a feeling that you were so happy to see this team lose? It definitely took me by surprise. There were a lot of crazy numbers floating around on Twitter, you know, comparing PSG to Atalanta. And one that really stood out to me was that PSG spent over $390 million to sign Neymar and Mbappe. That's more than what Atalanta have spent on all their players that they've signed ever since the 2001-2002 season. So that was really just a crazy stat that stood out to me. And I'll close out this segment with this. Just how much of a Cinderella story is Atalanta? Back in the 2014-2015 season, Atalanta were nearly relegated, finishing in 17th place and only with three more points than the 18th place team Cagliari. Last season, they ended up finishing a club best third place, qualified for the Champions League for the first time ever in their history, and they were just 5 minutes away from reaching the semifinals and knocking out PSG. PSG, a team that has Neymar on their roster, who alone makes the same amount of money as this entire Atalanta team at around $36 million. As I've said, no one will be taking Atalanta lightly this time around next season in the Champions League, but they truly have been a Cinderella story, and unfortunately, on that game, that night against PSG, the clock struck midnight for them. All right, so Inter are in the Europa League semifinals and will face Shakhtar Donetsk on Monday. They're the final Italian team left competing in Europe, and if you ask me, there's no reason why Inter can't win this competition. So I wanted to get some more insight regarding this game and all things related to Inter, and I've decided to interview Nima, a passionate fan of Inter, the founder of Sempre Inter, the number one destination for all things Inter in English. And he can be heard as one of the hosts of the podcast, The Serie A Show, and he is a good friend of mine. So let me welcome in my guest on the podcast, Nima. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good, Rafa. How are you?
Pretty good. Can't complain. So I wanted to get you on to talk about Inter. So let's get right into it. My first question, let's just take a step back and talk about that huge shocking news that hit us right at the conclusion of the Serie A season. I mean, no sooner than the season ended, and here comes this bombshell from Inter. We get word that there's a fallout between Antonio Conte and Inter's management over his post-game comments against Atalanta. So that, and then there were some reports that he could be out after just one season as Inter's boss. When you heard this news as an Inter fan, what was going through your mind?
Well, I watched it live because Antonio Conte created it. I was covering it at Sempre Inter. right. I mean, he literally took a nuclear bomb instead of finishing the season on a high note. He decided to take a nuclear bomb to every single interview he did after that game. Inter finish second in the Serie A, the highest position since 2011, equaling the tally of the 2010 treble winning side in terms of points. And this guy comes out with a nuclear bomb and starts basically executing one person after another. And this wasn't ranting and raving. This was premeditated. He had something to say because he kept saying the same things over and over again in every single interview he did with every single person he spoke to, including Inter TV. So Antonio, this was not Antonio Conte on an unhinged rant. This was Antonio saying something, wanting to say something, making a point. And as always, this is why I didn't want him. This is one of the main reasons I didn't want him, because the guy has he's very volatile. He has no self-control. He has no self-awareness. He's completely, in that sense, he's very similar to a certain occupant of the White House, but he's literally no impulse control. He can't criticize without creating a shitstorm, if you pardon my French. And that's what is. I mean, this isn't the first time we've seen it. He did. That's how he left Juve. That's how he left the Italian national team. That's how he left Chelsea. I mean, this guy just creates problems wherever he goes for no reason. And most of the issues is in his head. I mean, if we look at some of the stuff that he started throughout his career, I mean, he threw a hissy fit, the whole 10 euro, you know, 100 euro restaurant and 10 euros in your pocket comment came after Marotta didn't want to pay 50 million euros to Roma for Juan Iturbe. Well, that's because Beppe Marotta is not stupid. Right. And then you had the whole thing at the way he left the Italian national team, the way he, you know, going to Chelsea and complaining and whinging with everybody, you know, arguing with everyone under the sun and taking them to court, obviously winning. But I mean, you know, and then coming to Inter, and within a few weeks, he was already complaining. I mean, people have a short-term memory, but I cover this team 24/7 and have been for the past 8 years. This started summer ago when Marotta didn't buy him every single player under the sun within the first 2 weeks of his appointment, which he expected, which he thinks he doesn't seem to understand the dynamics of modern football in terms of the finances. It's not just imaginary. It's not monopoly money. It's actual money, and financial fair play is a reality. Except unless you want to go about it the way that the Man Cities and PSGs of the world go about it. But Suning don't work like that. Inter don't work like that, and he knows this. But I mean, it's you know, that was one of the reasons I didn't want him. The others are, you know, Milan Skriniar, who I think is a patrimonio del Inter. He's Inter's next captain if he's allowed to stay. And I saw this conflict coming already a year ago, and because I didn't see him, I can't see Skriniar working in a back three. Worked in a back three, and the same with Diego Godin. Although the past month it's looked much better, but this is Conte. This is what he does. It's always like this with him.
Right. Yeah. He definitely like finds ways to like motivate him. I don't know if you got a chance to watch the documentary here in the United States about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls, and it was just like he seemed to create Michael Jordan. I'm speaking of like create things out of nowhere, just any little thing to give him that extra juice and extra drive and. You know, Conte seems to have that mentality a bit to himself.
To me, that's Ibrahimovic. Ibrahimovic is like that. He's at his best when he's pissed off.
Right.
But Conte creates issues that aren't there. Right. You know, he creates things that don't need to be created. Even if he had a lot of points in what he says, the timing, it wasn't awful. It was god awful. Like, what are you thinking? What possible good can come from this? I mean, I spoke to so many people inside the club who wish to be unnamed, and it was off the record. But everyone was like, "Is he trying to get sacked?" Like that. Right. That was the reaction, and it wasn't just inside the club. It was to most people watching this. That was my reaction watching. Is he trying to get himself sacked? Because he goes in there and he just basically says everyone from the cook, the chef, the gardener, to the players, to everyone. But I want to thank them, but I'm going to stop there. Well, that's, I mean, how much clearer can you get? It's basically saying everyone who's a director and everyone who sits behind a desk is an idiot. And then Inter is not a stable club. He can pull stuff like that and shit like that at Chelsea and Inter and Juve because they're stable. They're much more stable. Inter are not stable. Inter are very, very stable, unstable. And this kind of thing sends shockwaves through the entire club. And that's what happened. I mean, all of a sudden you have emails being sent to the whole club instead of just to the president, by mistake. Nobody knew who sent it and why. And I mean, it was just, you know, these kind of idiotic things happen because Inter are not stable. You know, when they're under I mean, Trapattoni said it best. He said, working at Inter is like walking into a centrifuge. And that, because in terms of pressure, and that's exactly how it is. And people break under that pressure. It's difficult. You have to have an incredibly strong mentality to be Inter's coach. And the coach at Inter has to be the unifying force, not the divisive force and the dividing person, which Conte is outwards. But having said all of this, and this is really important, what he's done is, in terms of unifying that group of players, when he did this and throughout the season, it's clear that he's been able to build a group of players who will die for him. Right. And each other. That's unique. We've not seen that since Mourinho was there.
Right. Yeah, I was going to say, look.
Yeah, that's him. That's all him. Not to mention the fact that when Inter's play clicks, it looks unbeatable. It looks so damn good. He overloads and overwhelms his opposition. He runs them into next week. And he, you know, but when it works, it's really good. I mean, we've seen in the Europa League, most of these teams don't know what hit him, because he's so prepared. He's so damn prepared. He's so well prepared. He tactically, psychologically, physically, And he just reads everyone to death. And now the players are comfortable with his system, so they kind of know what's expected of him. And so that makes Inter a really damn difficult team to beat. But I think the most of this, I think the reason for this anger is because Antonio Conte can't handle any setbacks, because especially when those setbacks are his fault. This was a winnable Scudetto, and he knows that. This was a Scudetto where Juventus were there for the taking. It was a very weak Juve, and he bottled it. He bottled it with just after the lockdown, these insane choices and rotations, 7 players against Sassuolo for no reason whatsoever. Bologna as well. I mean, that's 4 points right there. And then Hellas. Yes. And then you have, you know, not to mention all the other stuff of Inter, the stat that Inter have lost leads, lost 20 points due to losing leads. You know, that would have put Inter up over 100 points. And he knows it was a winnable Scudetto, and he screwed up. You know, he did in terms of that. But the other side of it is Inter weren't even supposed to challenge this season. Like, they were supposed to, you know, establish themselves as a top 3 club. They did even one better and finished second. Semi-final of the Coppa Italia was a disappointment. The Champions League exit was a disappointment. But if he gets Inter to the Europa League final and even wins it, then no one will remember that.
Right. And you said about being a winnable Scudetto. Like, when you hear that Juventus won the Scudetto with only 83 points, considering the point totals that have been winning it these past few years, it definitely was a, you know, not as convincing of a win for Juve, and definitely up for grabs. I know you've expressed your displeasure for Conte in terms of not wanting him at the coach, but as you mentioned, he certainly gets the most out of his players and creates a unified group amongst them. We heard one of their new signings, Hakimi, say that he chose Inter because of Conte. So how significant would have it been if Conte did end up leaving the club after just one season, when you hear that certain players want to come play for him?
It would be a disaster. I didn't want him in the first place, but now that he's here, you got to deal with him. You know, I look at things very pragmatically. I prevent problems before they arise by looking, you know, at the situation and say, this is a problem that will arise. Don't go there then. But now that they brought him in, they can't just let him go, because most of these players have been bought for him and they love him and they will die for him. And not just Hakimi, Barella, Lukaku. I mean, all these players, they love the guy. They clearly, I don't know why. Personally, I think I can't stand him, but it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what the players think, and they love this guy, and it works. They absolutely adore him. They respect him, and they're willing to die for this guy. And that's you got to give credit where credit is due. And now that he's here, it would be an absolute disaster if he were to leave.
Right, and you mentioned Lukaku, and I don't know that I've ever seen him play so hard in his career, like from his days over in the Premier League. I mean, he's just, his work rate is unbelievable, which leads me into this next question. I mean, we saw the poor performance from Mauro Icardi in the PSG-Atalanta game yesterday.
One touch in the penalty area.
Almost forgot he was on the field.
Yeah.
And you consider how great Lukaku's been, so I'm sure you've obviously been ecstatic with how that's all worked out, but how great has Lukaku been this season, and what does he mean to this club?
He is the most important player on that team, not just in terms of scoring goals, but tactically, in defense, in attack. He's the reference point of this team. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There's no two ways about it. He is the reference point of this team, and that's why Antonio Conte basically almost resigned before, just weeks after taking over, when that deal was dragging on, because he was like, I need this guy. And that's true, because, you know, Conte said, you know, when he signed him, that he wants him to hold up play. He wants him to link up play. He wants him to build team, those first touches, everything that we were told by the Premier League experts that he couldn't do. He's done that. On the pitch. And off the pitch, the guy's a leader. The absolute leader. The positivity that this man spreads, the way he treats Sebastiano Esposito like a little brother, literally protecting him, giving him that penalty, everything, and giving the penalty to Lautaro. This guy is a team player. This is all about the team with him. It's not just words. It's not just, these this typical stuff that people say after the games. You know, it's not just cliches. He really means it. He walks that walk. I mean, Lautaro Martinez loves the guy so much they have this bromance, those two, where Lautaro bought them matching sweatshirts and jumpers over Christmas, and they were posting that on social media. I mean, he is a lovable guy, and I mean the classy way with which he carried himself when he had racist abuse hurled at him by fans in the stands, right, to idiots in the Italian press making racial puns. To Black Friday headline, not to mention the incredibly asinine anti-racism campaign that feels like it was 1 million years ago, but it was only 6-7 months ago when the Serie A decided to, with a chimpanzee, with every player colored a chimpanzee colored in different teams, crests and colors, to prove that they were. That still beggars belief that actually passed management and somebody looked at this and said that's a good idea, you know. But the way that he handled all these issues with the dignity and class that only befits a true champion. On and off the pitch. I mean, he is an ambassador for Inter on the pitch, off the pitch. He's a leader on the pitch, in the dressing room. You can't understate the importance that Romelu Lukaku has had.
Yeah, he's definitely been one of my favorite players to watch this past season. So Inter, they have their big semifinal matchup in the Europa League against Shakhtar Donetsk coming up on Monday. What are your thoughts heading into this game, and do you feel like Inter should be favored, not just to win that game, but perhaps the entire competition?
I don't think Inter are the favorites to win the competition. I think that's Sevilla and Man United. But having said that, I think, and I tweeted this out immediately, you know, after that shitstorm that Conte started in Atalanta, after the Atalanta game in Bergamo, I think Inter are going to win the Europa League. Because when things like that happens at Inter, first it's crisis. Then it's damage control, and then there's, you know, they find a solution, and everyone rallies around, and that's what's happened. They all have rallied around, especially the players, have rallied around the cause, and the cause is to win a title to prove the world wrong. Contro tutto e tutti. That's Inter in a nutshell. Although usually that's outwards and not inside the club, right. But whatever, it seems to work. So, you know, don't ask too many questions. If it works, it works. So I think that Inter are going to win the Europa League. And I think that he will resign after that. I think there will be, I think it's going to be a mutual termination thing. Because I think this man is completely, because his ego and narcissism prevents him. You know, he's his own worst enemy. He prevents him from admitting that he's at fault and maybe backing down and saying, I shouldn't have done that. Instead, when he'll win the Europa League and triple down on saying, look, if you'd only given me these things, if you'd only given me Edin Dzeko and Arturo Vidal and Giaccherini, right, I would have won the treble, you know? Like, this is how he works, because that's just how he is, you know? And I think that's such a damn shame, because he's so, so good as a coach. I mean, wow. I mean, having watched this, having front row seats to this season, I've never seen anything like it. The way he prepares, he's so minute, and like everything he prepares before and going into a game, he's never unprepared. And whenever he is, if he ever is unprepared, which he said he was, he didn't prepare well. I don't think that was against the Slavia Prague in the first opening in the opening game of the Champions League. I don't think that was him being unprepared. I think it was more an issue of fatigue and not everyone finding their places, although he went out there and says, I prepared the team badly, but then he complained again about not getting the players he wants, which has been a recurring theme. But, you know, it is what it is with him, and I think it's a damn shame, because I really, you know, a part of me, you know, what I think and what I want aren't the same thing here. What I want is for him to behave like a sane, healthy, normal human being, and maybe take a step back and apologize for his childish antics and throwing everyone under the bus, and that he stays on. Because if he stays on with this team, they're building a dream team. They're really building a dream team with him, and he is the right guy at the right place at the right time. He just you know, if they can just hire someone to administer Haldol to this guy or something so he can keep himself in line, that would be great. But, you know, just give Antonio his meds and let him do his job, because he is a damn good coach.
If they did part ways, like you suggest could happen, at least that's what you believe, who do you think could replace him, or who would you like to see replace him? I know when the news first broke a few weeks ago, Max Allegri's name was mentioned. Is he someone that you would like to see take over?
Without a doubt. I think the only person, after the two last coaches of Inter being clinically insane, I would like it very much if we had a boring classical Italian coach who's a company man, who follows the party line and doesn't go out and create a civil war inside the club like the previous two did. And although I like them as characters, it would be nice to have someone who is a bit boring, you know, who's calm and sane and rational in the way he speaks after games. The fact that I think he is one of the most underrated Italian coaches of the last 20 years. To me, Allegri is a super coach. I don't care that he hasn't won any Champions Leagues. I think he's so underrated tactically. I think he's so damn good. He really is a world-class coach. But I think that, you know, it's probably the worst kept secret in football that he's waiting patiently for the PSG job.
Right.
But I think I don't see that there being any opening at that inn, because I think that PSG are going to go to the Champions League final, and there is no way in hell you can sack Thomas Tuchel after that. This has been their big goal. They've won everything domestically this season, and the goal was the Champions League. And if they get to the final, you know, what are you going to sack the guy who brought you to the first Champions League final you've ever had? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. So I hope if Conte leaves, I hope it doesn't happen. But if he leaves, I hope and think it will be Max Allegri, who is the ideal. He's done this before. He's cleaned up after Conte's nuked the house. He's been the guy to rebuild it before, and he does it so well. And what Inter will get is a pragmatical person who does the best out of every situation. I remember when I interviewed Inter legend and Italy legend Riccardo Ferri. I spoke to him and I asked him who's the best coach you've ever had, and he said it was Giovanni Trapattoni. Not because maybe he was, you know, not just because of the way he won, but I mean, he said, I think what he said was really interesting. He said the difference between Sacchi, Arrigo Sacchi, and Trapattoni is that when Trapattoni, it's like when you're cooking. Arrigo Sacchi can only cook a brilliant meal when he has the right ingredients. Giovanni Trapattoni can cook you a 3-star Michelin dinner with whatever's in the house. I wouldn't go so far as to say that Allegri is in any way the same pedigree of a legend like Trapattoni, but he is that kind of a coach. He's very pragmatic. He does the best with what he's got. So I think that suits a club like Inter, who are in this situation with after COVID-19 with the financial implications that this has on the club. I think you have to have a pragmat. You can't have a ideologue. But having said that, that's the guy they've decided to go with. And I don't see him giving up on money. He doesn't strike me as a person who's very money grubbing, but I don't see him giving up that salary, 12 million euros net either. So I will have to wait and see. I mean, we'll have to, I hope to God, even though I'm not religious, that this guy, that he stays. I really, really do. I think it would be a horrible mistake. I think if he can just chill out and control his temper tantrums, you know, this can really turn out well.
Right. And, you know, you see it even here in the United States, like teams, they'll bring in a coach and then, you know, they'll kind of bring in players to fit what that coach wants to do. But then if that coach goes in a year or two, you're left holding a couple of pieces that maybe don't fit with the new coaches. And I'm not saying I'm not saying Inter have pieces that Allegri couldn't work with if he was the one to take over. But changing coaches is not as, you know, easy as it sounds. I mean, like it definitely could set back a club a few years regarding like the transfer market and changing the roster a bit. So it's not an easy task to take on.
Absolutely, which is exactly why I didn't want Conte in the first place, because there is no doubt in my mind that Antonio Conte would stay at, even when before he even coached the game, there was no doubt in my mind that Antonio Conte won't stay more than maximum 2 years. Mm-hmm. And if you've got a roster built for his football, that's just bad business. Because right. once he ups and leaves and throws a hissy fit because the Real Madrid job becomes available or whatever, then you're stuck with a bunch of Conte players. And that's silly when we've sold players like Milan Skriniar or Brozovic even to accommodate that. That's just bad business. That's not a good deal. So that's why I didn't want him. But now that he's here, you got to give him what he wants, and you got to do it with you know. That's why I'm so happy that Beppe Marotta is there, because you got to do it with logic and sense to a certain extent. Because Inter aren't backing down. Steven Zhang and Suning are not backing down. They're going to say that we're going to try to make you as happy as we possibly can, but you're not gonna get any veto rights here. This isn't the Roman Empire, and you're not Caesar. That's just not how it works here. I'm Caesar. You're employed by me. Never forget that. That's the tone that I expect him to have with Conte, and I hope that Conte can get that. You know, that he can get this through his head, that this is how it is, and he needs to control and accept where he is. They will do everything to make him happy because he's the general, but he's not the emperor. The emperor is the emperor, and the high consul are Steven Zhang and Beppe Marotta. He's not at the peak of that hierarchy. It is that simple, and he needs to get that.
All right, I'll get you out of here on this final question. We're talking about making roster changes, but this seems to be a player that could probably play for just about any coach. All indications are that Inter are the favorites to sign Sandro Tonali, but there's also been some growing pressure from Juve now that Pirlo is their coach and saying that he maybe wants him to play for him at Juve. Where do you see Tonali signing in the end, and how important would he be for Inter?
Sandro Tonali, Federico Chiesa, and Nicolo Zaniolo are the three best talents, three of the best players that Italy has produced in two decades. Mm-hmm. Right. After the 2006 World Cup, it's been the Middle Ages, a historical ebb for Italian football in domestic talent. It's been awful. But these guys, this generation coming up, is a generation that will bring Italy to the very top of the world, and will win Italy titles, whether it's a World Cup or Euros, that remains to be seen. But there's no doubt in my mind that this is what will happen, because it's not just the three of them. It's there's 10, 15, 20 players that all are that good. So whoever gets but these three are the biggest stars, if you ask me.
Right.
Whoever gets Sandro Tonali gets a generational midfield Italian talent. That they can build their team around. And Sandro Tonali at Juve together with Andrea Pirlo gives me nightmares as an Inter fan. With Bentancur and Artur Melo. You've got an average age of 22, 23, a central midfield with football IQ and technique that is stratospheric in terms of talent. And then you've got Dejan Kulusevski, who can play as a trequartista and on the wing, and then probably Federico Chiesa will play on the wing. I mean, Juve are building a team that will dominate for the next 10 years, if they pull this off and get rid of and get it. So but having said that, I honestly hope that he ends up at Inter, but my gut, and I've got this horrible feeling because of my experience, that tells me that he's going to, the three of them are ending up at Juve, all three. This summer. And it's not anything I know. This isn't me reporting. This is just a gut feeling that the revolution at Juve has begun, and Juve are unceremonious about, and this is what's their greatness. They are, I refer to them as evil geniuses. This is evil genius Juve at work. They are rebuilding, and they are unceremoniously, and they are what's the word I'm looking for? They're not sentimental, very unsentimental about how they are. They've done this before when they sold Zidane for 700 million euros, €70 million euros, and just replaced them with three world-class players and then kept dominating. This is classic Juve. We've seen this movie time and time again. They started with Matuidi. Higuain is on his way out. There's talk of Ramsey. probably going to go as well. Alexandro, and I'd say look out for Cristiano Ronaldo. I think he's on his way out as well. And that would free up a ginormous amount of resources for them to get all those three. Because remember, these guys won't command that high of a wage.
No.
Just by getting rid of Cristiano Ronaldo, you have 60 million euros to play with. So that can get you Federico Chiesa and pay his wages. That can get you Sandro Tonali and pay his wages. You know what I mean? So
right.
So Inter need to hurry up. You know, the end of the Europa League can't come quick enough. Sure. And I'm just happy that Steven Zhang is back in with this team, because no club needs the president present as much as Inter do for people mm-hmm. to do their work, do their jobs properly. And he is that person. He's proven to be an absolutely brilliant president despite his young age.
Right. And you mentioned Juve, you know, willingness to, you know, part ways with players that perhaps meant so much to the club. It, for anyone who's like an NFL fan, you see that with the New England Patriots. I mean, they have no problem moving on from players, getting rid of them like a year early before they really bottom out. And that's what's kept their dynasty running. And that's what's kept Juve being so good for so long.
No, it's pure evil genius, this.
Yeah.
And they do this time and time again. They are masters at this game, Juve. There's no doubt about it. And they are, and that's what's being done here. It was clear. They decided that the Maurizio Sarri project was too ideological for what they wanted. And Sarri was never lo stile Juve in any shape, size, or form. I think what they wanted to see. But then again, they didn't really give him the tools to play his football either. So I think Artur, you know, I have a horrible hunch that this is where this is going. I mean, I won't believe it until I see Sandro Tonali holding up an Inter shirt being presented. It's that simple. I have a really bad feeling about this. And the way that the Italian media, I mean, I've been covering Italian football full time for 8 years. I've been following it for 20 years. The way the Italian media works, this has got Inter Beffa written all over it. They just love that headline. And the day Tonali goes to Juve, it's going to be the Inter Beffa, to the mother of all Inter Beffa. So that's this is just my feeling saying, don't like this at all.
Well, for your sake, I definitely hope to see Tonali at Inter. I want to thank you, Nima, for joining me on my podcast. I look forward to talking with you again, and stay safe, my friend.
You too. Take care and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All right. So I wanted to just spend a little bit more time talking about Juventus's decision to hire Andrea Pirlo as their coach. On the last episode of the podcast, I mentioned how I feel that Pirlo could become a very good coach one day, but I wasn't sure if he was the right person for Juventus at this time. I felt that it was a gamble not only for Juventus to hire him, but also for Pirlo to take on a job where the pressure is so high to win now, especially win that Champions League. You know, perhaps Juve's management did convey to him that, you know, don't worry about what titles you do or don't win this season. We understand that it's your first season and that things may be a bit rough. Who knows what's been told to him? So for those of you who don't know, I am a teacher, and I've always felt that there are plenty of similarities between teachers and coaches. At the end of the day, just like teachers, coaches have to teach and implement some sort of system, some sort of philosophy throughout their team and try to get the best out of them. And I'm not questioning Pirlo's level of intelligence when it comes to football. I think no one is doing that. Everyone understands how smart he is and how well he understands the game. But just because you're a genius doesn't make you a good teacher or a good coach. You could be the smartest person in the world. You could be, you know, teaching the subject of science, and you could be as smart as Albert Einstein. But that doesn't make you a good teacher, because there's so much more that goes on with being a teacher, just as there is so much more that goes on to being a coach. As a teacher, you know, we have to find ways to motivate our students. We have to try to get them excited to learn and engaged and want to learn. We have to get ways to get them to work hard, not only in class, but also to get them to work hard at home. If we have them doing a project at home or homework, are we sending them home with the right skill sets, the right tools, the right knowledge that they need to be successful at home to complete this task? We certainly deal with issues between students. They could be having a verbal altercation in class. We deal with outside pressures, like from parents, from administration or whatnot. Just like coaches are going to deal with issues between players on the team, coaches are going to deal with pressure from management, coaches are going to deal with pressure from the media. When things are going great in the classroom, it certainly makes your job as a teacher a bit easier. But perhaps, you know, like when state testing comes rolling around, all that these kids are getting drilled in their head is, you know, how important it is to do well and perform well on these state tests. So how do we as teachers keep them focused? How do we keep them calm? How do we, you know, keep them confident and believing that they will do good on this test and not to stress them out? As a teacher, you know, I could have a student that brings an issue from a previous class. Maybe something happened in the class before. They bring that into my classroom. That kid could be dealing with something from home from earlier that day, and now they're coming into school, coming into my class. And even though these weren't problems that happened in my class, they're problems that I have to deal with now, because if I don't deal with them and I don't address them, that student could not be focused in my class. It could cause him or her to throw off the whole dynamic of my class. And then no matter how great my lesson is, it doesn't matter, because the dynamic of the students in my class is not there, and I'm not going to be able to teach that lesson. And my point for drawing these parallels between teachers and coaches are that we have a lot to deal with, and there's so much more that goes beyond just knowing your subject at hand that you have to do in order to be a great coach or a great teacher. So as I said, we all know Pirlo is a genius when it comes to understanding the game of football. So what I'm really interested to see Pirlo do this first season as a coach is, how is he going to deal with these, you know, off-field issues amongst players, you know, pressure from the media, pressure from management. If there's a disagreement between the players in the locker room or on the field or at training, how does he address them? How is Pirlo going to find ways to motivate his team? Perhaps if they're going through a rough patch, how does he keep them confident and believing that, you know what, things could turn around. We just got to work a little bit harder. We got to do this differently. Maybe there's something he has to tweak as a coach, because just like a teacher, coaches have to do a lot of self-assessing. You know, perhaps Juventus is having a great run of success. Well, how does he keep his team kind of level-headed? How does he keep them still focused and not getting overconfident that they could just show up next week against their next opponent and they're just going to win because of their previous results being so positive? So those are definitely things that I'm going to pay attention to with Pirlo as he develops as a coach this first season. And, you know, when you have someone who is a genius about their subject, and not only do they know their subject inside and out, but they have the ability to motivate their players. They have the ability to inspire their players to want to do more. They're able to deal with different personalities and handle the outside pressure. You end up getting a real special teacher or a real coach. And that's why, you know, I feel Pep Guardiola is such a great coach. Because not only is he a genius at understanding the game of football, he knows how to motivate his players. He knows how to get the best out of them. He knows what buttons to push and maybe perhaps when he needs to back off a little bit. And, you know, Pirlo has always said that he likes Guardiola and he likes his style. So perhaps, you know, obviously Pirlo will be hoping, Juve fans will be hoping that he's able to mimic the success that Guardiola has had as a coach. But my concern is just that Juventus are going to allow Andrea Pirlo to go through these growing pains and experiment with things at their expense. Because as a teacher, no matter how much training you get in college, you do your student teaching, until you're in there your first year as a teacher, and you know, you're the teacher, you're the lead person, there's no one to lean on, you're going to figure out what works, what doesn't work. You're going to try certain things. You may think that you could deal with this issue one way, but then you find out it doesn't work. There's so many things you learn that first year, and things you improve on as you get more experience. So that's the thing. Like Andrea Pirlo is going to experiment with things, and he's going to learn what works and what doesn't work in his first year as a coach, and it's going to be at Juventus where the pressure is so high, you know, where it's Champions League or bust, as I've said a few times. And that's just, I think, a gamble for Juve to allow him to go through that learning curve and essentially use them as his guinea pig. So it's certainly a gamble for them, but it's something that I think I'll definitely be paying attention to, and I would encourage you to pay attention to see how Pirlo deals with all these extra things that go on with being a coach other than just the X's and O's. All right, now moving on to Buy It or Sell It to cover some of the storylines and rumors that have been dominating the Italian media and the world of football. We have two quick ones to get to. Number one, Buy It or Sell It, Benfica should sign Edinson Cavani. I buy this one. Benfica are a strong team that consistently compete in Europe, but you know, it's a little bit surprising when you first hear it that Edinson Cavani is willing to go play in Portugal, a league that certainly is not as highly regarded in Europe compared to the top five leagues. A lot of people always felt that he would probably end up at Atletico Madrid. Obviously, nothing's official yet, but Benfica seems to be the club he is most heavily being linked to. But as I said, Benfica are certainly a big club in Portugal and a team that's been successful in Europe. So it would be a great signing for Benfica, and it's not like Cavani is joining a small club by any means if he were to sign with them. Plus, Benfica will be competing in the Champions League group stage playoffs this upcoming season, so by signing Cavani, he would certainly help them to try to get into the group stage where they feel like they should belong. They narrowly got edged out domestically this past season by their big rivals, Porto, in the league. So they certainly are looking to sign Cavani to help get them back to winning the league in Portugal over their rivals Porto, but also to help get them into the Champions League group stage. So yeah, 100% I buy it. Cavani would be a great signing for Benfica. It'd also be a great signing for the Portuguese league in general to add a star like Cavani. Number two, buy or sell that Cluj and Besiktas should not sign Mario Balotelli. I'm going to sell this one. Why wouldn't a club like Cluj sign Mario Balotelli? I'll be honest, I don't know anything about the Romanian Football League, but I'm sure Mario Balotelli would become an instant fan favorite there. He'd be arguably the biggest name, not only for Cluj, but in the Romanian League. It could help the club, the league, grow a bit in popularity and certainly attract a few more eyeballs to it. Plus, Cluj are going to be taking part in the Champions League group stage playoffs along with Benfica. So Balotelli has a chance to potentially play in the Champions League if he joins Cluj and is able to help them qualify for the group stage. I wouldn't have a problem with, you know, Besiktas signing him either. Now, the Turkish Super League is certainly a bigger league than the Romanian League, and Besiktas are one of the biggest clubs in Turkey and have such a passionate fan base. The fans in Turkey in general are as passionate as any in this entire world, and I would even call them crazy a bit. And I mean that in the nicest, most positive way. It's amazing how these fans in Turkey support their clubs. It would be a lot of fun to see Mario Balotelli playing in Turkey with all the madness that takes place during those games in Turkey. Now, Besiktas are in the Europa League, so Mario Balotelli, if he joined them, would be settling for playing in the Europa League, whereas if he signed with Cluj, he has the potential to play in the Champions League. As I said, the Turkish Super League is a much more competitive, bigger league than the Romanian League, so some decisions for Balotelli to weigh if he is able to get concrete offers from Cluj and Besiktas. But yeah, I don't see why either club wouldn't be interested in signing a player like Mario Balotelli. So I sell that. I do think Cluj and Besiktas should make runs at signing Mario Balotelli. So how about some quick news and notes to wrap up this podcast? Benevento the other day announced the signing of Camille Glick from Monaco. His contract will run until 2022. And you might remember Glick from his days in Serie A with Torino. He formed a really good partnership with Nikola Maksimovic. I think this is a great move for Benevento. Glick is an experienced defender, as I said, especially having experience playing in Italy. You know, we saw Verona, who got promoted last summer, who ended up finishing in the top 10 this season and shocking a lot of people. One of the main reasons why Verona had such a strong season is because they had such a strong defense. So perhaps Benevento are looking to follow this model and build a strong defense to help them stay up in Serie A. Their first season a few years back up in Serie A really didn't go well. They were pretty bad, so they're trying to learn from their mistakes. They're probably trying to follow this Verona model, if you will, of having a strong defense to help avoid relegation this time around. So that'll do it for the fifth episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you've enjoyed. Once again, please subscribe on iTunes, on Spotify, and on Stitcher. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That would be greatly appreciated to help us grow. And also consider becoming a patron to help support my work. You get some cool perks as well. The link to that is in my Twitter bio. And until next time, guys, ciao.